Be good.
Oh, damn. Welcome to the program. It's Andrew here, bringing you another episode of this Monkey Tooth podcast. And this one is with yet another person I met in Bombay Beach, California. Now, this gentleman who's on the show today, and I promise it's not all just a bunch of white dudes. I did interview other people. I interviewed at least one lady, two, rather. I've interviewed three actual female people. And yeah, they're not just all American white dudes, okay? That just happens to be what's been coming up here. But I promise, it's more diverse than that. What am I saying? I'm saying I got a great guest today. Independent of his gender, his identity, his happening to be just a white dude. His name is Gallo. Gallo is technically Christopher Gallo, but it feels weird for me to say Christopher because he never introduced himself as Christopher. I feel like he's the kind of guy that even like his parents and his children call him Gallo. I don't know that for sure, but it just sort of seems that way. I certainly call him Gallo, and you should too. He is, what do I say about Gallo? He is one of the most resourceful, fun to be around, creative type of dudes that you could ask to be around. I mean, he's just he's a sweetheart, kind of an irascible genius, very talented filmmaker, a great storyteller, a wonderful listener, and just kind of like he's definitely got a father figure type of vibe because he is a dad, a person who has to impart wisdom and safety and security to, you know, younger people. He did that evidently quite well. You'll hear all about it here in this episode. He's one of the very few dads that exist in Bombay Beach. He referred to everybody else there as kind of a Peter Pan, which I thought was awesome. I very much feel like kind of a Peter Pan figure myself. And Gallo comes from good stock. I cannot talk about him without mentioning also his mother. Her name, I think, is Barbara, but she goes by Babs on the Bay or by the Bay. I'll put up a link in the show notes. She was captured while out for a walk on video, giving some advice for younger people. She's in her 90s, and it went viral. I think like 15 million people have seen this thing. It's quite good. It's really, really good. She's such a sweetheart, just a cool person. And so obviously, Gallo comes by it au naturel. Anyhow, you're going to hear all about it real soon, as soon as I stop talking, which I'll say one more thing. I am heading east real soon, May the 6th. I am leaving the Bay Area of San Francisco, driving east to New York City, and I'm going to go straight across the country, except for a two-hour detour around Des Moines, Iowa. If you want to know why I'm doing that, pick up your copy of The Moron at the end of this book. That's moronbook.com. And read the chapter, Ain't Going Back to Des Moines, and you'll understand why it's worth it for me to take 2 hours to go around that damn city. But that's coming up, and I'll be out on the East Coast for damn near a month, and then I'll be driving back west with my wife and dog. Should be a good time. Hopefully lots of fake radio, more interesting people. Yeah, we'd love to see you. If you're anywhere near us while we're traveling, reach out. mtp.dog/contact. That's how you get in touch with us. And yeah, we'll see what happens. All right, I'm going to give you this episode. Be sure to check out the show notes. Look for Gallo's website. That's gallodp.com. Check out his Instagram. Definitely go find his mom. And if you're like a young parent out there wondering what the hell's going to happen, pay special attention to what Gallo has to say here. Some nuggets of wisdom. All right, until next time, do fun and interesting things. Good luck out there. See you later.
Well, it's nice to see a professional setup.
It's nice to hear that this is a professional setup from a professional guy.
Well, a professional setup is, do you want to do a podcast? No, but I will. And then you go in there and basically they just put the mic in front of you and the headphones on, and it's working already. There's not a technical thing, and there's an inventive clamping, and you know to kill the sound around, so that's good. Congratulations on have done this enough. that you know how not to bone yourself and make people comfortable. It's a good vibe in here.
I feel like you and I probably have a similar approach in that you know what you like as a filmmaker to watch and to consume. So like what I listen to, that matters. You know, like, what does it sound like? Can you hear the guest and the host? Is there weird fucking noises in the background?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I approach it. Are you that kind of filmmaker, or am I just...
I mean, I've just recently become a filmmaker. I was like a director early in my career. Mostly I work as a cinematographer, as a hired gun. I come in, I do my job, I leave, and that part is nice. And then I needed to raise money and change my financial life, so I became a director DP, which is like a director cameraman. And there, because I came from documentary, so I figured I can tell a 30-second story.
Yeah.
And it paid like 5 times more. So I amazingly got an agent, and it happened. And I did that for like 3 years to make enough money to buy my first like income property, a duplex.
Nice.
And then immediately quit afterwards because it's just a lot of hand holding, and you're selling things for that I didn't really care about or wasn't good for the planet or people. And so now in my career, which I don't have to take every job because I was able to get the income property and parlay that into another one. So I'm like a push monthly. So
nice.
Now I'm able to just take jobs that's called conscious media. And if it's good for the planet or good for humanity, then I'm interested in it. I've never worked on anything violent. I don't put my energy in that. Like the film I made last night, for me, it's inspiring. It's a redemption. It's kind of a redemption story, but it's just really about the power of the human being and how they react to things. You know, how do you choose to react? What's within you in this face of tragedy? What are you going to do? And for me, Lisa, like her response to be to create a healing cube, not only for herself, but for the community around her. This is it's like a mental ward here. And there's a lot of, the film is also a lot about mental health. There's so many things going on here, but mental health is one of them, and there is not an outlet, and so she created that, and that to me is a powerful thing that a human can do. Especially if they come from a dark background also, or a difficult past. Anytime I can find an example of somebody that overcomes themselves, that to me is inspiring and something that I want to work on.
It's hopeful. Maybe I could pull it off, because there's just tragedy waiting for everybody at some point.
It's way easier to show tragedy.
Yeah. So Healing Cube, the film that you showed last night, premiered it here on the side of a bus with this crazy screen. It was a triumph, man, because I only know you through a single conversation that we had on a telephone many years ago. And as a reference point, Tao references you regularly in conversation, usually pretty positive, saying nice, generally nice things about you.
Above 50%.
Yeah. So like,
it's over 20 years with Tao, so I'm fine with odds.
But, in the past few days, you and I have just randomly kind of interacted and had some, little projects together, but I don't know your work. I didn't get to really, I have no frame of reference for what you do. You just seem like a creative, sensitive guy. So to see that last night, was like I said to you afterwards, like, I don't know you, but I was proud of you. Mm-hmm. I felt like you'd achieved something in that bit of storytelling where you wove together this woman's personal tragedy, this town's overall arching tragic thing, and, this very injured person was healing herself and trying to heal a town. And I don't know, you wove together a really cool narrative that I was, you don't have to know anything about the Salton Sea or the loss of Shig, her partner. You don't have to know any of that to be invested. I feel like total strangers could see that film and feel something.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations on a beautiful thing. I hope you share it far and wide.
Thank you.
At some point in your life.
Yeah, people ask me what I'll do with it. I say to complete it. That's always my goal.
Sure.
I have a vision of it. I have, I would say with Lisa, why do we even care so much? There is something with me. I think that's why I was able to work in the film industry for 30 years, more than 30 years, as a freelancer. That is never working on the show. Just, mm-hmm. I mean, what kind of stupid business plan is that? Thank God I was too young to and dumb to realize all I need is random directors to call me every month for 30 years, you know, and that is my business plan. This is a terrible, terrible idea. Like when I look back on that, I don't even know how it worked.
Yeah.
It's an impossible equation, freelancing in the film industry, that people are just going to call you every month. Not being on like a regular TV show, which I hated because, you know, I can't raise my kids like that, right. You know, and I want to be present. So, I mean, it's working. So I went off on a side tangent and you had asked me, what am I going to do with the film? And I said, you know, that I don't know, I guess maybe some festivals, but I told Lisa, you know, I constantly gave her a final cut. I want her to be my partner. I want her to be on the board. I want her to be proud of it. She always had the final say, and I gave her my word on that at the beginning, and that's all she needed. And, but I think that, you know, there's something within me that just wants it to be the best constantly. And I just kept chipping away at the marble until, you know, the image appeared. And I think that is why, you know, I am able to work in the industry for so long also, because I'm constantly, there's something within me that pushes for the best possible outcome or imagery or storytelling there. So
yeah, hence the random directors once a month showing up at your doorstep with a gig, because you've got that ethic and you've got that drive to do the thing.
I think that is why.
Yeah.
And during the pandemic, you know, of course the industry shut down a bit, and then after that my son moved out. Turns out those kids are expensive as hell. And so my overhead went down even more. And so I've really been enjoying my life lately and living this like well-balanced life of being like a financial push every month where, you know, I'm just kind of cool and I can stay extended, you know, time places. So to come out in Bombay and be here for the full season, January, February, March, it's a real gift. And you know, I got all those trailers over there and whatnot, and it was a huge project, and I really credit the film industry for the perseverance to complete what I've done over there, like mirroring a double decker bus while converting it, you know, making it a house, doing the Spartan, the bathroom, the other things, graveling. I mean, it was insane, you know, and creating a cinematheque, and nobody outworks film people, and nobody, you know, all we need is the principle of what is the final outcome?
Yeah.
And we don't care how you get there.
Yeah. Just make it happen.
We don't care how you get there. It doesn't matter. What matters is, you know, what's the final outcome? And we have the most common sense and the best problem solving skills and just work together with people well to create the outcome. And that's what's been happening over there. And I really, and also long hours and production, like just being able to organize, you know, over and over, like what's next, what's coming up. That's all cinematography, you know, look at the next location, pre-lighting. I love the business and I love to be out here. And what did you ask me?
Well, what was that phrase you said the other day? It was like, it's gone with the wind in the morning. And
yeah, that's a famous film industry.
How's it go?
Gone in the wind in the morning and Dukes of Hazzard in the afternoon. Yeah, you know?
I love that.
And it's 100% like that. In the morning, it's like, oh, we should do this dolly shot. And over here, and we'll do like a one take and blah, blah, blah. And this, and after lunch, it's like, let's fucking roll, you know?
You said that to me the other day.
Stand there. Let's do that.
In the context of this, we were trying to get this screen together. And I'm like trying to measure this thing off a point. You're like, fucking put it on there and glue the shit down and let's go. That's great. I need to hear that from time to time.
One of my close friends, Catherine, is a, I guess like a perfectionist, and we did so many projects together, and we are constantly at odds because I tell her perfectionism is the nemesis to completion.
Yeah.
And there really is, like you can, and it's a serious thing to consider in your life, that you are postponing the right time, the right material, the right tool, that you're postponing everything for it to be perfect, and it never gets done.
Yeah.
And you can pass your whole life like that in a relationship, in health, in construction, whatever that, you know, in writing your book. And it's easy to wait. And perfection is the nemesis to success or to completion. And I don't play like that at all. I'm more about efficiency and getting it done. And, you know, possibly doing it twice, which I'm fine with.
Yeah.
Because then I learn something as well.
Yeah.
And it's still faster than waiting for it to be perfect.
Where are you from? Where'd you grow?
I'm born in New York, and most of my damage is from New York. Of all my aunts, uncles, and grandparents, everybody's from New Jersey and New York and Northeast. The Northeast is a whole different. It's a brand of person.
Yeah,
it's a style. It's very aggressive. It's very sarcastic, and it's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
It is hilarious. But the West Coast, East Coast, West Coast, I mean, West Coast, boy, you bring that Northeast heat, you bring that tongue, that Northeast tongue to the West Coast, and I mean, these people are going to therapy, you know. I really have to be conscious of, it's hard to be self-aware, you know. Consciousness and self-awareness is an interesting thing, and you know, you want to be aware. You wake up out of bed, you know, when I wake up, I'm like, okay, who am I going to be today? You know, this last season, you know, since the winter solstice, and even the fall equinox, I've really been focusing on like kindness and generosity, and like just mantraing up, and just I'm just getting those neuropaths. You know, I'm just constantly trying to build new neuropathways in my brain. And when an opportunity comes to be kind or generous, you know, I see it, and I try to make the groove a little bit deeper.
Nice,
because kindness and generosity is not where I came from. It came from being real tough, real hard, and whatever somebody says to you, you better come back on a double down, or they're gonna
roll you,
or you're done for.
You're finished. Yeah.
My aunt, I mean, if you couldn't protect yourself, she was gonna eat you alive. Yeah. You know? In a hilarious way that just hurt for 30 years.
Italian.
Yeah, Italians, yeah, of course. Yeah.
I love that. I mean, just the arc of what you just said now. From the East Coast to the West, just the way you framed it and layered it with kindness and self-awareness was like encapsulated that East to West transition.
It's really true. Yeah.
It's definitely embedded in you.
It's definitely. Yeah.
So do you have West Coast kids?
Yeah. My boy is born in Venice. He's
temperamentally West Coast. Did you impart some East Coast on them?
I mean, probably, unfortunately, but my son Luca, I mean, you know, we had a water birth with him, and he just came out, and he was just, didn't cry, just, it was just like,
mellow.
He was just so mellow in the water. It was really amazing. And I mean, I often say he didn't speak for like 3 years. I mean, he would look, my friends would be like, your son is, I have to leave. That
staring at me.
He sees all of my shame, and you know, I feel like horrible for the life I've led up until this point, and I have to go, you know. So I don't know how much I had to do with that, because his spirit, when I often describe Luca to people, it's true. I very much, and I often credit him with, him teaching me kindness.
No, sure.
I would say that his, one of his strongest traits is softness, kindness. He's very easy to be around. He's very gentle, regardless, in spite of my horrible, just terrible mouth and who knows how many times of frustration of, you know, parent raising. I mean, we lived together for 22 years.
Yeah.
And now he's super grateful for riding him and making him the man he is. I mean, he is a 100% self-sufficient, just phenomenal.
That's cool.
His skyrocketed right out of the house. Just boom, just a little filmmaker in his own. You know, but he was like, he's like, no, Dad, maybe I'll give this video thing a try. I'm thinking, oh, like it's inconvenient to you? This little video thing has been paying for your ass for the last 20 years. And then I'm thinking to myself, and then he says, but I'm just going to focus on sports. And I was like, wait a second, did he just call out a niche market? I was like, oh, he might just be okay.
Nice.
Like 2 months later, he lands a job at like the NFL. He gets all these jobs on the Instagram, then applies for this NFL job instead of going out, lands this. And he's an amazing editor and shooter. And basically he would show me work in the house. I'm like, Dad. And I'm like, if you're not ready to hit the space bar when I walk in there, I'm leaving and I'm not coming back. And maybe like, and then he like, and I was like, and so then he finally got it down. I walk in, hits play, I watch it, and I give notes. And after like 2 months of this or 3 months, I was like, I have no notes, Luca. I was like, you don't realize it, but you are a producer, director, cameraman, editor, color corrector, sound design, and you know, some graphics. I was like, that is a big package, dude. This is like a $6,500 job you've done here. How much are you getting for it? He's like, $300.
Yeah.
And I'm like, build your portfolio, but know your worth. Know your worth here. Yeah. You are so well-rounded. You know, that's cool. He just goes out by himself and brings it back and is able to see it through. He cut a bunch of sequences in the film.
Yeah, that's what you were saying.
And he answered the phone so many times. My God. And that is his kindness, right? He'll be out with his friends or something. He'll just take the call. He knows that I need help. And he's so kind. And when I say thank you, he was like, you did a lot raising me and I'm here for you.
Did he learn any of that stuff from you?
I mean, a lot of it is in him. Like I have two stepsons also, Sebastian and Joaquin, that I met at 5 and 7 and lived with since 7 and 9. Nice. I mean, when I was 33, I had a newborn. I had a 6-month-old, a 7-year-old, and a 9-year-old.
Jesus Christ.
It was nuts.
My palms are sweating. Just thinking about that.
It was nuts. It was a solid decade of this terror dreams, financial terror dreams. I swear to God, it was a lot.
I can imagine.
It was a lot. Oh, yeah. And, totally worth it. I love my relationship with all my boys. They're all in LA and, we get together often and they come to the house. We have barbecues and now they're like, yo, where are you at? Because I've been the last couple of years since Luca moved out, the last one, I've been just kind of living more. So 3 months in Bombay, two, 3 months in Italy, and then go back to LA for 6 months. And the first time it happened, they were just like, are you coming home? Where are you?
Yeah.
And I was like, is everything okay? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, then no. I just did 22 years of being responsible. I'd like to think of myself as a very good father. It was the most important thing in my life. And
what a gift.
And I put a lot of focus there. And I wanted to make sure and impart the seeds of where the line is as far as right and wrong and just listening to your own instinct and understanding finances as well and start building it there and, just never really crossing the line. You can lean over it.
Right.
You can look. But once you step across that and you know it, you know in your gut, everybody knows it.
Yeah,
this is the line. I'm looking. I'm leaning. And once you step over it, I can't help you. And you can't save yourself.
Mm.
We used to have this phrase, you can choose your choice, but you can't choose the consequences of it.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. Yeah. And it's very... It's very true, and it goes with women, and it goes with work, and I always just said we're here building good humans. I don't give a damn what you guys do.
Right.
We're here for integrity. We're here for character. We're here for well past the finish line kind of mentality, mm-hmm. kindness, generosity, and just always pushing those things, financial independence, health, just respect, family.
Is it a family ethic from your folks? Or is that just something you've developed in your life?
I think some of it is family ethics from my folks, but I mostly from my own learnings.
Yeah.
Of things that hit me and are important to me. And I wanted to, I want to put some good humans out there.
Yeah.
And when they would go out when they were younger on jobs and things like that, the feedback that I would get, or I would hear things like, accidentally, I would hear people talking about my kids in such a positive way. I felt really
that's awesome.
Yeah, I very, very rarely get any negative feedback about my boys. They're very good men, and I'm super proud of them.
It's a hell of a project. I mean, I
that's the big project.
Yeah, I have no frame of reference for. I'm a decent uncle.
Mm-hmm.
I was a lot better when I lived nearer to them. I hope they have fond memories of me. I certainly loved them, but the. When people talk to me about children, that project just seems so crucial.
It's funny, in Bombay, there's like 3 dads here. Sean Taylor has got 3 boys with him, and that's one of the first dads I've ever seen out here.
Yeah.
Greg, he's got the older daughter, but it's just a bunch of Peter Pan, adult kids.
Yeah.
And you have no idea the level of responsibility it takes and who you have to be, who you have to become. To be a good parent and raise a child is that's transformative.
Yeah.
It's a decision. It's a choice. Yeah. It's way easier to be a bad parent. I'm going to put it that way.
Is it?
Oh, neglect and just,
You think they sleep well, though?
What do you mean?
Do you think a bad parent? Because you said you're aware when you're crossing the line, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
If you're aware of your bad parenting or your neglect, you think they're relaxed?
Um,
or they just don't give a fuck. They're so selfish.
I think they die with guilt, but during the days that there's a special place in your mind to black it out because so you can deal. And then as it starts coming to an end, you try to make some.
Yeah.
It's kind of a typical story, I bet.
It's a tough thing, man. I can't imagine being a parent. You know, there was a moment in my life where I realized that my mom and dad were just people.
Right.
And that was such a freeing thing to me because I've got older siblings. There's like six of us. And like every 10 years, my mom would have two kids. And so we've got this weird spread. And I would see my older siblings holding my parents to account in this way that was like, fuck, man. I don't feel like anybody should be that perfect or well-rounded or right, you know?
Oh, yeah. Every Father's Day with my kids, we go out and I go, you got any leftover grievances? Who's got some pain in there? I was like, first of all, I'm sorry for all of the shitty things I did. It was not intentional. Yeah. Who's got something that we need a clear out, you know?
Do you get notes?
They kind of said, they're like, you're good, G. You know, still like, you know, the first couple of years of it, when they were old enough to be able to express themselves, it was important for me to clear up because you know you it's like a backpack that you can just carry the rest of your life, you know, and I don't want them to have that weight, you know. Am I perfect? No. Was my intention there? Yes. Mm-hmm. My intention to do the right thing was always there. Did I do it perfectly? 100% no. Did I make mistakes? Yes, a million times. Would I wish I did it better? Yes. But that's what happened, and you know, how can I create a healing now around anything that did not go that well?
Yeah. Well, I met a guy named John Sebastian. He's he was the singer and guitar player for the Lovin' Spoonful. Mm-hmm. He's in his 80s now. And we were talking about music and influence and the muse and the things that drive people to make music. And he's always made this happy, upbeat shit. And he's like, you know, I've always been kind of jealous of guys who had like fucked up dads or people that didn't do a good job. Because my family life was so perfect. I had the easiest childhood. And you know, he's like, I never got that angst. Like, man, even if you do it right, there's going to be some lingering thing with your father, you know? Like, his dad did too good a job.
I sent my son for his 20th birthday to this, like, one of these, like, weekend seminar things that it can be very transformative. And especially at a young age, I went when I was, like, 40, and it really had a strong effect on me. So I was like, well, what happens if I send you a 20? And one of the feedbacks was like, he's like, Dad, first of all, what he got out of it was that which is a super amazing thing to get. What he got was that he let what other people think about him affect what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he was done with that.
Nice.
He was able to see that what he thought other people thought about him. Just let that go and just do whatever he wants. So that was a good investment. But the other thing he said was, he was like, Dad, people had some fucked up shit. He was like, I realized I was struggling to come up with
a trauma.
Yeah. He was like, I didn't really, he's like, their stories were nuts. He's like, people go through some intense shit.
Mm-hmm.
He had this episode where he got hit in the head with a bat. He was running through the playground and just kind of ran into this game and took a fucking bat to the head. And that was his childhood.
Literal trauma, not some figurative thing, actual blunt force.
Exactly, yeah. But like an emotional one.
That's pretty good, man.
Yeah, I was happy to hear nothing, you know, because sometimes wacky shit can happen when they're out of your care sometimes. But
totally.
If so, that would have been the moment to probably break through there. And
yeah.
So I also felt relief in that moment.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to just, I could talk to you about your kids all day. They sound awesome. I do want to get just quickly before, because I know you've got a busy day, man. You got a ton of shit to do. This shit starts tonight. Today's the day, right? The beginning of the Biennale.
Yeah.
But your filmmaking and, you know, I mean, you as a cinematographer, you talked to me on the phone a little bit about it, and you're, insight, even just as like a guy, a shooter, like just someone picking shots and choosing, making choices, the way that you engage with film, I'm curious about where that came from. Did you go to school for that? Or did you just, in La Calle, did you learn in the street?
I would say that, you know, my brother's a clothes designer, an amazing artist, and he, you know, he did everything. And my sister is a dancer. So it was, you could very much see, you could see their talent.
Mm-hmm.
It was just right there. I had nothing. I was like the baby. And so I needed a tool. They didn't need tools. They were just like,
It's in their
right
body.
Out there. It was in them. So I needed a tool to hide behind. So I had this camera I could hide behind. And, you know, I was doing something. And then it, you know, it kind of evolved. Started in high school. My influence was Henri Cartier-Bresson from The Decisive Moment and still photography. They were just the timing of his photographs. They were impossible moments, just impossible. And so I started shooting in high school and, you know, like documenting this, you know, our punk rock scene, you know, like this of us just partying. And they, you know, then my photography teacher put them in the yearbook. And that was kind of like the first time that I realized how you capture something and, you know, the quality of it and how it can last through time. Like, oh, this really was, these are really inside photographs. Like nobody else is in that circle.
Right.
Kind of like, you know, a good example is like the Greg Stesic from the Dogtown guys with all the,
right.
It's just a skate scene. You know, who knows? It's just a, it's just one of the guys there with a camera and he's just shooting it, you know, and you can't tell they're going to be legendary. Right. Just, you're just doing it. Not that my photographs were legendary, but at the same time, you're in a small circle. Yeah. And that kind of kicked me off. And I did go to a film school, but no, like it was like just a little buffer class, like a 3 months or something like that. And I went to the Art Institute for photography, but as far as filmmaking goes, it was really just be on set. I worked my way up traditionally through the film industry, and because we were shooting on film, there wasn't digital cameras then, so it was very difficult to build a reel. You had to get short ends, you had to get a camera, it was expensive. It's not like today. You know, I showed a film last night that I shot on my iPhone.
And right.
If I told somebody I shot it on the Red, they'd be like, yeah, of course. But they always say that, you know, at the American Society of Cinematographers, they say, if you give a shitty camera to a great cameraman, he'll make great images. You know, if you give a great camera to a shitty cameraman, he'll make shitty images. It's not the camera.
Yeah.
It's just not the camera. It's the cameraman. It's lighting, it's composition, it's movement. If you have to be moving the story forward with the images that you're telling. And I would say, you know, I came up as an assistant and I could have paid more attention. I was more fucking around and I had, you know, ego, and I thought it was so fucking cool. And then while I started shooting, I don't know, it just, look, everybody's who they are and then you do what you do. And if you believe in yourself and listen to your instincts, then that's what comes out. You know, to show the film last night is terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's a, and I wanted to make sure and let them know that it was terrifying because there's a lot of artists there. Scared to write their books, scared to write their scripts, scared to show their paintings, this and that. And I just want to let them know that you can, and it's terrifying. And that is one aspect of it. You know, I'm going to show my work and be judged by my peers. You know, because when you're editing the film, it uses you and your computer in a room with no one.
Right.
And then you send it out to some people that you trust. You take some notes, and they're all raised differently by different parents in different places. So some of their notes, you know, you have to be careful.
Right.
Is it emotional for them? Like, I'm looking for structural notes, you know, and then, and then I just look for consistencies within like three people. If they all said this one thing, then I will I will look into that more.
Well, that audience last night would, I would imagine, be particularly harrowing because it's creatives and people in your industry. And people that know this town.
Yeah, right here. Yeah.
Real, real well. Mm-hmm. And that was the subject of the thing. So you had a lot of shit that could be picked apart.
Yes. You know,
so that was brave. But one thing that I really like about what you were just saying, you know, you're paying attention to images and trying to capture moments and things, but you also clearly have a knack for making the subject. Because it wasn't just images and capturing moments. Mm-hmm. You were in dialogue with a person moving through a very sensitive thing, and she was so comfortable around you, man. And that's not always the case when you get somebody on camera.
I come from documentary, and if you can't make your subject feel comfortable and that you're on their side and that you want the best out of them, and that, you know, then you're not going to get anything for sure. And
to get someone who's camera shy to look into the camera,
yeah,
is like, to me, that's a alchemist's thing.
Lisa definitely, I mean, there's a, I have a fuck you Gallo reel. There's a timeline of just her being like, fuck you Gallo, fuck you. Not now Gallo, no. Gallo, no. You know, I mean, she was just not, at the beginning, you know, she quit. You know, we'd made an agreement and then, you know, she quit like after day one. And literally day one, she just says all this like super dark stuff in the van and it was lit terrible. And I'm just like, oh my God, I was like, I was not ready.
Right.
You know, we were just going for a walk and all of a sudden she just goes for all this stuff. And the next day she's like, I'm not doing this. I'm not comfortable, you know? Mm. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I saw that coming. I knew she would quit, not on day, and not on day two, but I just let it breathe. I didn't, I didn't push it. And then, you know, always wait 24 hours.
Mm.
Always sleep on something. Don't push.
Yeah.
And she was fine. And I calmed her down and she came back around to, it's all about trust. You know, you're building a lot of trust there.
And that's, you obviously did it. So congrats. It's a triumph, man. I think that was a triumphal thing and a beautiful snapshot and document of this place and that lady's journey. And the loss, like for me, I knew Shig very, you know, I met him, we worked together on some things. I actually injured myself here at the Zigzag House, and he was the first person on the scene. Like, I was walking in and these doorways are low for me, and I had heavy shit in my hands and a tool belt on, and I cracked the top of my head on the bottom of the door frame, and it busted my head open, and I tweaked my back and like fell. I couldn't get up. I had to call somebody. I was like, I've fallen and I can't get up. And Shig was the first dude on the scene. Like, he helped me, you know, and, you know, he was an interesting dude. Man. Yeah. He wasn't, you know, you could tell there was like a funny darkness in
him. They're like the same person. You know, there's a lot, they're physically the same. They have the same amount of anger in them and angst, you know, and.
But he was also very gentle with me. Like, you know, he was a strong guy and he, and like, I just didn't tear. You know, like tears coming out of my eyes because my back was hurt. Like that crazy shooting pain.
Yeah.
He helped me get into a chair and was like, hey man, what you need? You all right? So I'll always have like kind of a sweet spot for him. So when I saw, because I didn't come for the memorial, I wasn't here, you know, and I didn't really, you don't really get to grieve a lost person until you're somehow in their orbit again. And seeing that last night totally got me. The moment he, because I didn't have a frame of reference for what the film was about. I had no idea what I was about to watch.
Right. That's like, great.
Yeah. Even though you and I had been so close together, I had no clue. And then when I saw it was going to be about, that was the narrative thing was about Shig. I mean, it immediately got me. I immediately started crying and felt that like that cathartic release of that grief, you know, that I didn't really have when, you know, when he passed, you know.
Yeah. So
thank you for that, man. I mean,
absolutely.
At the very least. Well, I know you got to get going, man, but I'm grateful to know you and, I want to support your work in any way I can. Is there a place people can go see your shit or do you have things on Vimeo and?
Yeah. I mean, they can see my work at gallodp.com, G-A-L-L-O, D like David, P like Peter.com. And then, the film itself, The Healing Cube. I mean, I guess I'll go for some festivals or something coming up. Maybe I'll just go for like the biggest festivals possible. And if I don't get in, then I don't know. It's a very personal, intimate tale. I don't know why I made the film. It was the hardest thing I ever did. And I don't want to exploit Lisa.
Of course.
You know, like, do I need to show the world? It's like, I like the film because I like a story of somebody that overcomes, that goes beyond. You know, I love when Miss Aqua, I was trying to get Lisa to kind of word it, but Miss Aqua out of nowhere said, you know, I asked the Lord to go beyond what all the things I need to be, you know, and it ain't easy being a powerful woman. And that to me is Lisa right there, you know, that she went beyond herself. And stepped into real power there. And that to me is the, if I was to put the film out there, it would be because of that. She can, I can. That to me is an important.
Is exactly. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. That's the film I wanted to make. That's the film I made. And that's the reason I chose her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if for what it's worth, you can tell her, I said, she came across very, very well. And I think that's helpful for people to see. And, you know, if you hear this chatter about community, people are like, oh, community is the most important thing. That was in action. Like, that's how it works.
Yeah.
You know, that the community actually supported this person 100%. And each other. And so I think it's a document worth sharing, but I totally respect, you know. Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to share it, and I want to also make sure, and there's a fine line between sharing something and kind of like, and also I'm anti Biennale in the respect that I lived in Venice, and I went through the whole gentrification there, and I call Bombay Desert Venice. You know, it's a 1 square mile where you ride your bicycle around a bunch of artist studios and then go down to the water for sunset. And I'm not trying to have a bunch of people come up in here, a bunch of like, you know, whatever they're called, Gen Xers or like the Silicon Valley. I'm not trying to have a bunch of people that want to be cool and have got a bunch of money come in here, buy up all the real estate, force all the locals out, and then think they're cool.
Yeah.
But filmmaking like that could do that.
Yeah.
It could be a calling card to, oh, I want to be a part of this.
Calling cards out, man. The genie is out of the bottle, dude.
I know.
I'm sorry to tell you, man.
It's true.
You know, the lifting that you may do on it is, you know,
minimal.
It's
already launched.
It's launched, man. There are 30 fucking trailers on the edge of town and like a paramedic's tent. And like your film is heartfelt. You know, it's clearly not exploitative, but I hear you. You got your own thing to wrestle. So
my art piece for this year is a sign that says nothing to see here. Go away. And C is spelled S-E-A. And it's a play on that. There's, you know, if you just take the word two out of it, I like the idea of like neurolinguistic programming. And so when you look at it, the word nothing, see here, mm-hmm. and see go away, mm-hmm. you know, there's like, it's an environmental statement. And at the same time, for all you tourists that are driving by, like, oh, mirror double-decker bus taking pictures. There's nothing to see here. Go away.
Yeah.
Like that. I came up with it because there was a contest for a billboard. And I was like, Bombay Beach, nothing to see. Go away.
Nice. Well, it's also...
They didn't pick that.
It's also the three monkeys, you know, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no mm-hmm. evil. It's a little touch on that. I like, well, man, thank you for coming around, for talking to me and for, I think I thanked you at the time, but you were very generous to me on the phone talking to a guy that you didn't know who had dumb film questions about a thing that I didn't even get a chance to attempt. So, that was a just very,
you're welcome. You had a good, you had a good, like, you're going down the Mississippi. I can't remember exactly why, but I did like the metaphor and the reason that you were doing it. What was it again?
I didn't get a chance. I mean, I
know, Andrew, but
I wanted to document three kind of things, like the river itself as a geological thing, the cultural thing, food, music, people, and then my own story of kind of redemption. You know, I had a stroke and had all these things, but I couldn't overcome those things to get on the river.
Well, your life ain't over yet either.
It ain't over yet. There's time. And I'm really actually quite glad I didn't, because it was the worst drought in the Mississippi River in like 60 years. Mm-hmm. And there was like 40 yards of mud between the river and the bank. So like camping would have been a fucking nightmare. Mm. Yeah. So anyway. But
I was happy to I led two workshops out at Mars this year, two filmmaking workshops. And after the first one, they were so stoked. I mean, a couple of people told me I learned more from you in 2 hours than I learned in 3 years in film school.
I'd love to. Even if I never make a film, I would love to know more about it, because filmmaking is the most complete art form that we have as a species.
I do feel like it's the most powerful form of media.
It's everything.
And transformation and change out there. So you really have to be careful what you work on.
There's carpentry and plumbing in filmmaking. You know what I mean? Like everything touches filmmaking.
Yeah.
And that's cool to me. Well, back to carpentry and plumbing for you, buddy.
You're going to help.
Happy to, man.
You're coming back over today. Yeah,
all right, brother. Well,
thank
cheers,
you,
man.
Andrew. Appreciate your presence here. And I like that you're doing the podcast and you're talking about good things and just your presence here in the camp and your coffee offerings and how you've been going around to a bunch of different people. And just being helpful and having good vibes. You know, it's a... Not everybody's presence is as gentle and generous and comforting as yours. And so I appreciate you being here. And of course, the mystical being Pele.
Yeah, man.
He just follows you around and you're like, this is Andrew's dog. Andrew must be fine.
That's great.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Some come up. It was blue and gold. Some come up. It was blue and gold. Ever since I put your picture in a frame. I come calling in my Sunday best. I come calling in my Sunday best. I come calling in my Sunday best. Ever since I put your picture.